I'd say way back then, but back in Buffalo days.
All right. We'll get back to that in just a second, but we're going to head to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline right now. And welcome a guy we haven't spoken to in a while, and that would be Michael Landsberg, longtime TSN person, advocate for mental health, has the website sicknotweak.com, joins us this morning. How are you doing this morning, Michael?
Hey, JR, what's going on?
Not much. How about you?
You know, I'm good. Today's a joy for me, right? It's, I get to talk about what I think is the most important thing I can talk about. Not that clearly, nobody knows more about every single sport. Nobody has a more incisive opinion than me. But this is the most important thing that I can talk about. So it's cool. Yeah. Hey, Simmer, what's up, bud?
Not too much, brother. And obviously, we're sorry to hear about your father. And one thing I saw you tweet out, though, that by the time you went to the funeral, which was very quick, and then after, did that in a crazy way kind of get you recharged and inspired for today and just things going forward?
Yeah, my dad was, Ron Landsberg, was an orthodontist. And he was, it would be really weird if I went on your show and said, oh my God, my dad was an idiot. Everyone hated him. But so everybody eulogizes their parent, or most people do, to kind of inflate what they were. But my dad, according to everyone but me, was the most incredible person, the most giving, the kindest person. I mean, if I say it, it sounds self-serving. But my dad had, in his office, people would come in and they would tell me, I love going to your dad's office. My mom worked at the front desk or ran his office. And my dad obviously was working on teeth. And they would say, oh my God, your dad always asked me about my life. You know, the lesson I learned from that is ask people about their lives and they remember it. So, you know, losing a parent is tough, but losing a parent who made the world a better place is, I think, slightly easier.
We all want to make our parents very proud, and I'm sure he was very proud of you. Would you rank being the top quarterback in the Jewish Football League? Like, was that a moment where he said, I did it?
That's my
so
boy.
Funny you asked that. Hey, JR, why are you laughing? See, that's so disrespectful. You know, I was the Josh Allen of, God, I hate the Bills. I was so happy they lost. Oh, my God. So, you know why I was so happy they lost? How petty is this? Listen, how petty is this? My daughter and I are watching, and we're cheering against the Bills because Carlo Colaiacovo loves the Bills, and when we worked together, was insane. Oh, yeah, we can't lose. No one's going to beat us. Wait till we go to the Super Bowl. So we're cheering for Kansas City wildly only because of Carlo. How petty is that? Yes, greatest Jewish arm in the history of Toronto touch football.
All right, in all seriousness, listen, we can attack the sort of the mental health topic on many different, but while we're talking about your dad and your parents and what a big part in your life, how hard or kind of take us through the process of, as you were kind of struggling with your own mental health, mm-hmm. conversations that you had, and we all know the importance of talking. We've learned that. The conversations that you would have had with the special people in your life, your parents, your wife, people like that. How difficult and or easy was that?
You know, JR, it's a nice segue, but, you know, like so many, like a less experienced and brilliant mind would have gone on to, so, Bell, let's talk day. Are we doing better with this? Have things really changed? But no, the top of this interview was all about my dad's passing, and you tied it into that. And I will say this, this is mostly serious. When I was a kid, I battled really severe anxieties. I was afraid. I had something, and still do, but something called emetophobia, for real. And that's the fear of throwing up, the fear of being around someone who throws up. The idea of throwing up freaked me out. And because of that, I wouldn't ride in a bus to camp, for instance. I would do anything I could to avoid situations where in my anxious mind, where somebody was going to throw up and I would avoid that at all costs. And that shaped my childhood to some extent. But I never talked about it because I didn't know. Like, I didn't know, hey, Michael, you got emetophobia. This is part of, you know, general anxiety disorder. I had no clue. If I would have had one person, guys, one person to share with, if I would have had this person who I could have said, you know, I don't talk about this, but, you know, I get this feeling, which I can't really explain, but I feel like I need to avoid certain things, and I can think about it for a week in advance and build myself up in a way where it ruins the week in advance. If I would have had one person who would say, yeah, me too, I get that, I understand you, it would have made all the difference in the world. And, you know, I was giving a speech to a construction company out by the airport, and I said that story I just told you guys, and three people out of 75 put their hands up and said, me too. I have emetophobia. One woman said, I have emetophobia, and because of that, I will never have kids because I'd be afraid that my kid is going to throw up. Like if I would have had that when I was 12 years old, it would have changed my life. So I want to be that for people now because they need this one person in their life who understands them. It's not about how many people are around you. You can be at a Sens game and have 12,000 people around you, or you could be at a Leaf game and have 19,000 people around you. Dig at the Sens there. But it's not about all of them around you. It's about one person who understands you. That's the key to all of this, finding someone who understands you.
Michael, how different is that dynamic and for your parents' generation of as a kid, you know, and this is also about showing weakness, admitting versus the way you've approached it and how much better your son Corey is able to deal with his own issues and that, hey, the expression, we talked about that earlier, just the dialogue and also having a bit of a plan of how the hell to tackle this.
Yeah, by the way, I like JR, I love you. Simmer, like we're buds, and you came up to me at an event in Ottawa, and I don't even think we knew each other at that point. I mean, of course, I knew you from, you know, from your four games in the National Hockey League.
It was three, and two of them were playoff games.
Yeah, well, that's got to count for more. So you came up to me, and I think I was with my wife, and I went, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, it's Timmer, oh, my God, assistant general manager with the Washington Capitals, oh, my God.
He built those Leaf Cup teams.
Yeah, oh, my God, he went to Russia for like 12 hours in his job, oh, my God. But, you know, you talked about mental health with me at that point, and you were not – quote unquote out at that point. Yeah. And now you are, and I follow you on Twitter, and you know, I think you've proven that just talking about your own situation will change somebody else's life. The generational thing is a huge problem. People didn't talk about it in my parents' day and therefore in my childhood. But my son, Corey, as you made reference to, because you're obviously friends with him as well, you know, since he was five, battling the same anxiety as me, emetophobia, fear of throwing up, he has it too. And since he was five, he and I have talked about it all the time. And I was able to give him comfort knowing that, hey, me too, Cor, here's what I did for this. I mean, I can't cure him, but I can make a difference in his life. Talk is huge.
Talking to Michael Landsberg, talk is huge, but also kind of finding the supports, and whether it's conversation or beyond that. I think one of the difficult things that a lot of people who are still struggling with it, Michael, have is, what do I do? Who do I reach out to? What is kind of, if there is a catch-all, what is kind of the easiest solution to get the ball rolling in the right direction for people that are listening right now?
Yeah, I think the first thing is you need to share with someone. If you keep this a secret, you're never getting better, right? Like I tell people, you got to wake up. You know, you keep thinking that, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just going to keep riding this out and I'm going to get better. Yeah, you know what? If you have a bad 2 weeks, that doesn't mean that you have a chronic illness like depression or anxiety. But if you have felt that way for 9 months or a year, or in many cases, 5 years, I promise you, when you wake up tomorrow morning, you are going to feel sick. You are going to be just as depressed and just as anxious. You need to get help, and you have to understand, help's not coming to you. You know, there's no Uber Eats for mental health care. You cannot just simply ride it out because you're giving up your life to your illness. Unfortunately, I gave up my life, probably 5 years of my life, to this illness that I can obviously never get back. You need to find one person to share with and start the process. And the process really begins in a flawed system that has so many holes in it, going to a family doctor and saying, okay, this is what I'm feeling. I need you to make some suggestions perhaps I need you to write a prescription for me. I'm not here to endorse drugs. I'm here to endorse, you got to do something. You got to do something, and you got to leave everything on the table. Doesn't matter whether it's medication or magnetic stimulation or other meds or ECT or, of course, talk therapy. You have to decide, I will do anything to get better, because there's nothing really worse than where I am. And that starts the process. You need to get into the process and into a flawed system. I'm not going to lie to you. The system stinks. I know people who are dead because the system let them down. I can't change the system. All I can do is try to encourage people to fight with everything they have, this illness that sucks every bit of energy out of them. It's complicated, but there's only one way. Start the fight.
And to that, Michael, is interesting, because I end up getting on medication, and then I'm talking to you last year when I'm going through things. You're on that, and I'm on a golf course talking to somebody I somewhat know. He's been on it for 25 years, and then I find out my best friend's on it as well. Is that part of, and again, as you said, we're not pushing anything, but for me, I will say a year later, that has been by far the biggest change of curbing my anxiety, is sharing simply stuff like that and understanding also when you get on it, it's not the first day you're going to take it and you're going to feel great. It's a process, but hey, at least, and again, not for everybody, but at least I can honestly say it's really helped me.
I can honestly say that medication saved my life. Now, I don't mean that I would have taken my own life. I mean, eventually I would have. If you told me I had to live the way I was feeling back in 2008, I have this thing. I have these marks on my arm, and they say 11-24-08-YULMH-521-0400. That's November 24th, 2008, Montreal, Marriott Hotel Room, 521, 4 a.m. in the morning. I sat on the edge of the bed, and I was so sick for so long that I thought, wow, I know why people take their own lives. I have no desire whatsoever to get out of bed, to go on with my day, to put on the mask, to try to fight through this. Everything was taken away from me at that point. Since that point, I have been on medication. And while I may not have taken my life, it gave me my life back, because if you're severely depressed or severely anxious, and I think the two are related, like most people experience symptoms of each, if you are severely ill, then you're not living. You are in some altered state of consciousness. Your heart is beating, your organs are working and all of that, but you're not living, because the only reason to get out of bed is to get back in bed. That's no way to live. And I tell people, if you're thinking to yourself, maybe he's talking about me, find out if it's you. We don't always know we have a mental illness. It doesn't hit you like, well, you know, go for a chest x-ray and you'll see if you have pneumonia. Mental illness can hit you so slowly. In my case, it did over 9 months, a tiny, tiny change, that you don't know you're a different person. Sometimes it takes somebody else to say, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Are you sure you're okay? I'm fine. Well, you don't seem like the same kind of person. Those conversations need to be had. And you don't have to stop me from talking. You could just hang up on me, because I'm going, and I'm unstoppable.
I like it.
You're all good. Michael Landsberg is our guest. Is every day a better day for you, or do you still struggle?
I still struggle. But my struggle, because of medication, instead of being a zero or a one on what we call the Sichter scale, I live my life between a 4 and a 7. So the medication takes away the bottom for me, but it also takes away the top. And that's a downside of medication, right? You know, I am numb to some things. You know, it's not like I have to search very long and hard for an example of something that was emotional for me. I mean, my dad's funeral 2 days ago, standing and giving him his eulogy, I was not distraught. I was sad and I was emotional. But I know if I wasn't on medication, that would have been a battle, as it should have been a battle. Sometimes sadness and that kind of pain is totally appropriate. Medication should only do one thing: allow us to feel what the situation calls for. That's it. Nothing else. If it calls for sad, if it calls for devastated, then you should be able to feel sad and devastated. If it calls for euphoria, you should be able to feel euphoric. But I can't feel euphoric, and I can't feel sad and devastated the same way. I live my life in this narrow range, but that is a deal I'm willing to make with the devil being the medication, which, again, I vouch for it, even though it's far from perfect.
On the sad and devastated, in a crazy way, does that help you with being a Leafs fan?
You know, I don't know if this is the right time for that. You know, it's so funny because it's like...
But it's headed in that direction. All the hope is there right now.
Well, here's the thing. You know, just wait for the playoffs. Oh, my God. The Leafs they've always been a playoff team, right? They've always been a team that, you know, maybe not during the regular season, but in the playoffs, we are going to roll. We are going to be clutch. Mitch Marner is going to have 20 points in the first round. We're going to be unstoppable. You know, it's funny how sports, there's a couple of things in sports that I still love the same way, but there's a joy in my life which comes from not talking about the fourth line of the Maple Leafs. Seriously, it's like, oh my God. But the NFL playoffs last weekend was the best football. Football's my sport, right? My favorite sport.
Yeah.
That was the best 2 days of football in history, and the Bills game was like the greatest game ever.
It was incredible. You're absolutely right. Okay, to wrap up, and you've given us kind of lots of great things to think about. You've got the website, right, sicknotweek.com, which has got great help and great supports on it. I think we ask you this every year when you come on, but you're always so good and so helpful for people, and a lot of people kind of listen in silence. If there's one message, one thing that you could leave for people listening right now who may or may not be dealing or aren't aware that they're in not such a great place, what would that be?
Ask yourself this question. Ask yourself, pick a time when you know you were mentally healthy, and ask yourself, okay, let's say 2 years ago when I did this, I felt just basic joy, something not, you know, I won the lottery 2 years ago and I was really happy. Something that brings you basic joy, and ask yourself, does it bring you the same joy today? Can you experience joy? And if the answer is, I don't know, then go and talk to someone. No one ever got hurt by saying, you know what, I may be battling something. I'm going to go and see about it. So measure it for yourself. Take the basic joy test. Does that sip of a cup of coffee in the morning, which brings me basic joy, does it still bring you joy? And if the answer is no, go get help.
You're a great man doing great work, my friend. We're glad to hear that, you're in a good place for the most part. And again, condolences on the passing of your dad. Really appreciate you jumping on with us today, though.
Yeah, you know what? Put me back on. I got to talk to you guys. I got some things to say to both of you that may shock you, but too damn bad.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Michael. Appreciate it.
Okay. Love you, Simmer.
Love you, brother. Cheers.
All right. There's Michael Landsberg joining us this morning on the Gabriel